We're going to actually talk about something very calming. It's something, admittedly, I do not know how to live what I'm about to speak. I am wanting to learn how to live this. So Psalm 23 says this: "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." I used to confuse that, by the way, as a kid. It seemed like a paradox to me. I remember hearing, "The Lord is my shepherd. I don't want him." That's what I thought it meant. And so I just didn't really know what I was supposed to do with that. The Lord is the shepherd I do not want. Why? Because he makes me lie down. I mean, think about a kid. He makes me take a nap. It's exactly what I don't want. Okay. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you, capital Y, are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies, and you anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We could go home and just let that percolate. What has been churning in my being for the last month I've just been recapping. This was one of the passages that I translated in Hebrew in school, just during Hebrew class. So this was, I may have picked it because it was only six verses long, but I was like, yes, I'll do that one. Someone else do the long ones. But this is one I did, and what I took away from it, although having known it all of my life, was it is so vivid, particularly in the Hebrew. And I've told you guys before that Hebrew is the language for the visual learner. I mean, translation is wonderful, and we have the benefit of being able to read in our own language, but you do lose something in the translation process from language to language. And it's, you know, it's fine, but that's some of what we get to do, and particularly if we're going to study the scriptures, is to dig a little bit and see what's there. And the Hebrew of Psalm 23 is so vivid. There are images that actually have been rattling around in my skull over the last month just because they were so vivid when I saw them. And so I thought it'd be fun to just rehearse that with you. Because the activity of the Hebrew language is simply that. It's active. It's not just nouns and verbs. It's got some pictures and action. And maybe you'll be like me. You'll walk away and you'll be like, oh, I will never forget that picture again. And so we're just going to prance through six verses. And hopefully in that, maybe even catch a glimpse of the true heart and nature of our Father. It actually begins, I didn't read the first part of it. Psalm 23 begins, in my version, with a smaller font and an italics, which is a psalm of David. That is to be included. And a psalm, as you know, is a song or maybe a melody. This is a melody according to David. Now, all the psalms are not by David. I always thought it was. They're not all by David, but this one happens to be one ascribed to him. And this is something, he wrote this somewhere along his journey, having a shepherd's upbringing and a king. We don't know exactly what point in his life he writes this, but we're in Music City, and so there's a lot of songwriters. At least you've been around some songwriters. Songs get written in some very poignant and specific ways. And if you start thinking about this as a song, or a melody that David, maybe it was just something he's whistling, you know, around the cold chambers of the rock rooms within the palace. And he's just got this in his guts. And he maybe just starts to sing. But just like any song, there's almost, you have this movement. You have a refrain. You want to do in a song. You know how we have choruses and we have verses? And the verses kind of tell us a little bit more detail about what that chorus is going to continue to repeat, right? Well, this song apparently is a little different. These songs were not written for Music City. They kind of launch out immediately, and they tell you what the chorus or what the mantra or what the theme of this song is, and it's in verse 1. It's, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Now here, we got to back up into the Hebrew language. We're not going to rehearse what the words are because that's not always helpful. But we are going to rehearse what the meanings are. The Lord is my shepherd. It's not just a noun. It's not just God equals shepherd. It's not you just see God in his shepherd's garb and his staff and he's shepherd. He is a shepherd, yes. But sometimes I think we get lost, depending on what our version of God is, that we just see that God is the shepherd in the sky who is given directions onto where the watering hole is, and you in the journey of your life have to discover it, or the shepherd will find you and beat you up. It's very different. This is not just God is shepherd. It's the power of the participle. It's the Lord, yes, is my shepherd, but more specifically, it's a participle, which is this, it's active. It's the Lord is shepherding me. Now we're in the intimate chamber with God. It's not just about God. Okay, well, he's shepherd, and I've got to figure out how I relate to shepherd God. This is very different. This is the Lord is shepherding me. Actively, now, present tense, and apparently future. And I could probably look backwards and say then too. The Lord is shepherding you. So what? I will not be in lack. I will not lack. There's your theme for the melody that's rattling in David's heart. The Lord is shepherding me right now, actively. He may be in great times, he may be in hard times, but David has something coming out of his very soul that's saying, regardless of what is going on in my present situation, the Lord, Yahweh, that this is a Yahweh word, is shepherding me right now. Therefore, I am not lacking a thing. I don't lack anything. Now, just like a good shepherd, we're going to see what that produces. And that's the theme of our song. The Lord is shepherding me. I will not lack. Now, here's the verses that accompany that. And there's going to be verses of nourishment, verses of guidance. There's going to be some verses of himself to shepherd you, to shepherd me, active shepherding. There's going to be protection. There's going to be nourishment, guidance, blessing, and ultimately goodness. So listen to his song. He makes me lie down in green pastures, the grassy pastures. So how is it that God shepherds me? How is he shepherding me right now? Well, if you can think of all the little sheep coming behind the shepherd in the grassy pasture, the nourishing, lush, green pasture, the shepherd settles in. It's time to be nourished. It's time to be fed. It's time to gain our strength and then ultimately to gain our rest. He makes me lie down in the grassy pasture. It's actually causative, which means this. It's not, again, versions of God can play with how we view these words, but he causes me to lie down in the green pastures. Now, this can happen several ways. If you're not inclined to lie down in the green pastures when it's time, God, oftentimes through the circumstances of our lives, when the dishwasher doesn't work, or the dryer, or the first car, or the second car. Hmm. He makes me, causes me to lie down and grieve. Have you ever just gotten so fed up and exhausted? Stephanie's laughing about this, by the way, and I'm not. She's gotten to the place of, oh, that's funny, the dryer doesn't work, or the blow dryer doesn't work. And I'm kind of like, I'm still not thinking, I don't think it's funny. Not there yet. But you know what? You do get there. If you've had those places in your life where you're just like, are you kidding me? Okay, fine. There's no way I could list that out and fix it all right now. Not a chance. So I have a choice. I can churn and grit and be upset and nuts, or I can lie down in the grassy green pasture of the Lord and just let him work. He's really good at it. He causes me to lie down in green pastures. Fascinating. He leads me to, by, or near the waters of rest. The calm waters. It's the waters that are easy to drink from. If you fall in, you don't fear because the current isn't strong. He leads me by the waters of rest. He restores my soul. And I love this one. This is where the images start to come out. The word restore there is the Hebrew word for repent. It's the turn word. It's shuv in Hebrew. It's to turn. And it's causative too. He causes me to turn. Specifically, he causes my soul. But it's not, Hebrew, they didn't think we're a three-part being. Body, soul, spirit. That was more Greek, and we catch it from Paul later in their culture. Our culture still is a part of that. Hebrew is much more coordinated. So the Hebrews understood that there was a soul, but not in the sense of, you know, I have a soul and a spirit and a body. Their soul was it was nephesh in Hebrew. It was the life force. It was that which animates you. It was the very thing that is you, but it's enlivened or it withdraws. And so in this scenario, the shepherd, the one who's shepherding me and you, he causes our life force to turn. He actually is the cause of infusing life back into us. That's who he is. That's a part of shepherding God. He shepherds us in such a way actively now where he causes us to turn. He causes our life force, just that thing that emanates out of us, to be filled, refreshed, and pointed, focused, resting, nourished. He guides me in the paths of righteousness. Now, here's the image that has just stuck with me through the years after translating it. He leads me, guides me in the paths of righteousness. Do you guys remember, those of you who were around during the Opryland theme park days? There was a ride which would never get by today. It's not nearly cool enough to be included in any theme parks across the country. It was called the Tin Lizzies. And there was something about the Tin Lizzie. It was these old, like, you know, 20s, 1929 Ford kind of looking things with the real small, you know, the real thin tires on them. And you'd sit in there. And as a kid, this was it was actually greatly disappointing to me, because when I saw it, I was thinking, that's a really cool go-kart track. When you get on them, however, it's not so much, because there's a rail that runs in the middle of the track. It doesn't really let you steer. The best you can do is just make yourself sick by going back and forth and running into the rail. But you can never get off that rail. Although there were some teenagers that managed to get off one time. And that was cool. But that rail just keeps you, and, you know, you have a gas pedal, you have a brake pedal, and you choose how fast you're going to go around the track. But ultimately, there's no real else to go. As long as you have the gas pedal going, or you have the brake and someone behind you has the big gas pedal going, you're going to make it all the way around, bumping and whatever, on that track. But you'll get back to the beginning. You'll get back in. That's kind of what's going on here. The term here is so visual, for he leads me in path. It's not the term that means like the wide path, like a walking path. It actually is the term that's used for the rut that is made by the wagon in the dirt. He leads me in wagon tracks of righteousness. That's the image. It's this well-worn path, and after maybe it's rained or whatever, the rut begins to get deeper and deeper, so that as long as you're in that rut, you follow it. There's nowhere else to go. The wagon tracks of righteousness. What a cool image. And what that means, it's a big deal, is you don't stray to the left or the right. You are focused. Righteousness is not a meandering path through life. Righteousness is a focused, intentional, well-worn, ancient foundation type of path. We've talked about righteousness before, and that righteousness, maybe instead of thinking of it as piety, like I'm doing the right things, righteousness probably is better understood as relating correctly to your situation and setting. So righteousness is extremely relative. It has to do with what situation you're in, who else is involved in it, what happened yesterday, what's going to happen tomorrow. Righteousness is a shepherding, present tense reality. You and I require the intimate daily shepherding of the Lord to walk in this thing. Otherwise, we'll pick it on what feels best to us, out of maybe good morals and good ideals and whatever, but that's no guarantee that we'll walk in righteousness. I mean, how many things have been done in the name of God or in the name of church or in the name of Bible that all appear on paper to be righteous, whole, and good, but in fact are not, because they violate the very people that we're meant to relate to? I mean, think of the picket lines outside of any stadium. You know, God hates gays. What? When did we get there? How righteous is that? Someone got the tin Lizzie off the track, and they're driving around by themselves. That's what's going on. He leads me, you, me, shepherding actively in paths, wagon tracks of righteousness. They're well-worn. They're established. God knows where they are, and it's not a meandering through life as if we're aimless and just, oh, what do we do next? What do we do next? You get in the channel, and off you go. That's his shepherding. It's the style of shepherding that he has. He causes my soul to turn, my very life force to be restored, to be given back, to turn into. And he leads me then in wagon tracks of righteousness. Why? Or how? For his name's sake. What does that mean? Well, he does all of this. It's actually according to his reputation. He leads us, he restores us, he nourishes us according to his reputation. Now, Jesus has a way of saying this, in that seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. There's other places that we catch the version of God's righteousness has to be, it's measured against himself, not against us. God's goodness and what he distributes is not really measured against us at all. It's not on our behavior, it's not on our activity, it's not on our actions, it's not on our personhood or bloodline. God's goodness is always measured against himself. And so the amount of restoring that can happen to your nephesh, your life force, your very soul, the amount of leading in righteousness, regardless of what path you might have happened to jump down in your life, is not based on you. His shepherding is based on his namesake, his righteousness, his life force, his nourishment. That's what it is. It's for his namesake. It's not so he looks better. It's according to his reputation. Even though I walk the valley of the shadow of death. Now, here's where the translation could get us in a different perspective than what is intended. When I look at that in the English language, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I could read it, and I have read it in the past, of, okay, should I have jumped the track on my own? I'm now out of the wagon tracks of righteousness, and I'm, you know, caravanning across the deserts looking for my own green pastures. Should that have happened, and I find myself in the death valley? the shepherd will be nice to me. Even though there is not even though, as if, well, you screwed it up and you got into Death Valley, but your shepherd will come after you. This is the term, it's moreover, in addition to, or let me tell you what I really mean as a part of David's melody. If you didn't catch it with the green grasses and you didn't catch it with the nourishing and the restoration of life into your very being, if you didn't catch it with he's going to guide you in the wagon tracks of righteousness because of his goodness, because it's according to his. Qualifications are about him, not you. If you didn't catch that yet, moreover, in addition to, let me tell you how far the rabbit hole goes. When you find yourself in the valley of the death shadow, don't be afraid. For you are with me. Now, a little theological jarring's about to happen here, okay? First, the shepherd's picture. What's the valley of the death shadow? I don't know that it's a physical place. I didn't actually research that. But the idea is this. The sheep don't need to be in a place near the woods where the shadow lands. Why? Because that's where predators are. A predator can easily come out, grab a sheep, back into the dark places. That's where they get picked off. We've got guineas that run around our farm, and we started with, well, we've had a total of 12 of them. There's 4 of them walking around now, and it's because they just go in a circle, and, well, they're not very bright either. In fact, had they been a guinea-herding people, it would all be language about guineas in here instead of sheep. The Lord is my guinea-herder. That's what it would be. They're not bright. They get picked off like that. They're not a bright bird, but they're an awesome bird because they eat ticks and jiggers, which makes me love them. But they get picked off so easily, particularly by the woods. That's where the predators are. So the idea here is our lives oftentimes will go into these places where you can tell, wow, I'm in the valley of the death shadow. Meaning that death is lurking around me at any given moment. It's dangerous. I can get picked off here. And then there's this weird, don't fear. Why? You're with me. All right. If you're in the valley of the death shadow, and God is shepherding you, and he's with you in the valley of the death shadow, how did you get there? Perhaps he took you there. David would have had a staunchly, what we would consider now, a Jewish understanding that good, evil, it's God. Meaning God is God over both. And so I can choose to look at life and evil and say, well, something is now rivaling God in my life. Or I can just understand God is God. This is where the jarring comes in a little bit, just from our perspectives. If he's with me and he's shepherding me and I'm in the death shadow valley, he took me there. David would have been well at home saying that. Very comfortable. Singing it, actually, with a melody and passion. So why don't you fear? Because if I'm there, he brought me there. And if he brought me there, he's with me. You could probably talk to a shepherd and they would know that at certain times of the year, in order to get from this grassy pasture, which has now been eaten up, to that grassy pasture, which hasn't been eaten up, you have a route that you have to take. You have to go through certain places. Some are not desirable. Some are fine. There are undesirable places that we get to go through in life. Not because God's mad at us or mean to us, or the enemy has come in and somehow usurped the shepherding power of God, but because God himself is leading us through. in wagon tracks of righteousness, rightly relating in every setting and time. It's the beauty and the power of understanding. He is shepherding me. Can you choose to have a perspective other than that? Absolutely. Will it be as comforting? Will you fear? Probably. This certainly doesn't answer all the questions of life. It doesn't answer, you know, God, where are you when it hurts? Where were you when this happened? But I'll tell you this, there is a perspective screaming out of the 23rd Psalm. Maybe this is that crescendo. Maybe this is the climax of the song. Even though your goodness, it's nice to think about you, God, when it's grassy pastures and there's calm waters. But what about when there's trees and wolves and darkness and death can be smelled? What about then? Well, David would sing to you, even then, he's with you. His rod and his staff are there to comfort you. The rod happens to be a defensive weapon. It is to, in fact, deal with any predator that may come out of the woods. It is a club of sorts meant to bash and destroy and end the life of any would-be predator. The staff is more offensive. It deals specifically with the sheep. The sheep wants to wander. Oops, back this way. Sheep wants to wander. Oops, back this way. Defensive, offensive. The Lord is shepherding you. He is keeping things that do not need to be near you away, as well as making sure that you don't wander off the path. He's causing these things to happen. To lie down, to take rest, to take nourishment, that's God. You can disagree with David, but that's what he's singing about. This is my God, wherever I am. Think about Psalm 119 here. Wherever I am, if I go to the heights of heaven or to the very pit of hell, you are there. We've got, 4,000 theological years on David now, but he simplifies it pretty rapidly. Your rod and your staff, what do? They comfort me. They console me. Knowing that he is shepherding you, shepherding me actively right now, and knowing that God has the ability with both his rod and his staff to not only lead you and guide you and keep you from going off, but also to defend you from anything coming in that should not be there. David would probably have issue with this mindset that we typically have. The enemy is attacking me, and I've got to do this, this, and this to deal with it, because somehow something has gotten through the guard of the shepherd, and I've got to right myself into better position so that God can finally reach with his rod the enemy, or catch me with his staff because I've gone astray somehow. David would probably challenge that. David has a piece of God, so do you and I. Perhaps he doesn't have it all theologically correct, but guess what? David walked his life, it appears, and he sings it now, or this melody of his very heart, that it is God. I will not give allegiance to anything else. If I'm in the valley of the death shadow, my shepherd brought me there. If there's danger, my shepherd will take care of it. Actually, more actively, my shepherd is taking care of it. If I found myself going astray, or if I don't know what righteousness is, if I don't feel the rutted, well-worn, ancient foundation tracks that the wagon has gone before, shepherd's crook. Come on. This way. This way. He's shepherding us. So you come through the valley of the death shadow in the song, but you haven't come out of the fear of enemies. It's actually in the process of being consoled in the valley of the death shadow that the shepherd stops. Now, that's scary. We're no longer moving through the valley of the death shadow. We're stopped. Trees, darkness, howling wolves. This is not a good thing. Shepherd. The verb form, please. Shepherd me. He sets up a table. A banquet, actually. For you, it's tangible. It's going to be real. For the rest, it's just kind of a spectator sport. For your enemies to behold. In the middle of the death shadow. In the middle of your enemies, a table, a banquet is set up. It's going to be on display. In the presence of your enemies. And then, just like every Jewish festival, there's a ceremony. In a Jewish festival, when the person who is honored, it is the fruit of the olive tree and the fruit of the vine that are poured out over the one who is gaining honor, who is being honored. And it's just poured all over them. And everyone knows that's, well, because they're going to be gooey after that. That's who has been honored. In the valley of the death shadow, before you ever get through to the next grassy pasture, it is, this is a good place. Right here. I must have the banquet. It's just going to be a feast in the midst of your enemies. We are really uncomfortable with this, by the way. This does not feel good. And if you don't know how to read the way the shepherd goes, you're going to read it wrong. You're going to assume that you're in the wrong place. You're going to assume that you're in the wrong time, that you somehow have gotten out of the Tin Lizzie track and you're now meandering across God knows where. But in reality, you could be at the table and there's a banquet in front of you where fear no longer resides. Has your circumstance changed? No. Evil lurks all around. And now I'm going to feast. I'm going to feast in the midst of my enemies. Not only that, but he, capital H, the shepherd, anoints my head with oil. My cup, the wine, overflows. I am being honored in the midst of my enemies. This is an activity of the shepherding of God. That's his personality. If your life is hard, and there's varying levels of hard, picture, I'm not talking about a heavenly banquet awaiting, you know, some glad morning when this life is over. I'm talking about in the midst of the valley of the death shadow, sitting down and letting the Lord, through that circumstance, honor. According to his name, according to his reputation. It's not really the honor due you. It's really the honor due him poured on your life, on your head, in the midst of your circumstance. What a beautiful, powerful, vivid image. One that I require more input to actually live. You've anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. I mean, this is the picture of just blessing upon blessing upon blessing. And here's my favorite. Surely goodness and mercy or loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. Translation here, the one I prefer, is the word surely is also an equally translated only. So this isn't a hopeful word in the sense of, well, surely, there's got to be some goodness and some loving kindness coming out of this. This is only goodness and loving kindness follow me all the days of my life. Do you live in that perspective? David apparently does, or at least can sing about it. He at least came up with a song, a melody that was in his soul one day. And these are the words that captured it best in the moment. Is only good, regardless of if I thought it was good or evil. Tov hara, regardless. The only thing pursuing me at my banquet table in the middle of the death shadow where my enemies are encamped around me, wanting to devour me, I have a perspective because I know who my shepherd is, that the only thing chasing me is goodness and loving kindness. Forever. I mean, think about practicing that perspective from now to the rest of your days on planet Earth in this body. Think about that. If you could orient your perspective, you might be able to find more joy in the commands of the apostles in the New Testament of rejoice. I'll say it again, rejoice. Where the three pillar apostles all have this mantra. Paul says it most crystal clear, and that you should rejoice in your tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. Perseverance, proving character, and proving character, hope. And hope does not disappoint because the love of God, the goodness, the loving kindness of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. That's powerful. Do you see how you get it, though? Tribulation to perseverance, perseverance, proven character to hope. I want to be a hopeful person. I want joy in my life. Well, it comes in this. The shepherd himself has shepherded your life in such a way that he is not afraid of the valley of your death shadow. In fact, he's so not afraid, he likes to set camp up there and put out a nice table. It's time to sit and feast in the midst of the valley of your death shadow. How bizarre and weird is he? And it's in that place the enemies get to watch as God actually honors and parades, yes, himself, but it's through your life. As he pours the fruit of abundance on you. Now, that does not necessarily mean lottery winnings and big houses and planes and all that. That's not what that means. The fruit of abundance from the fruit of the vine and from the ground. I mean, that's different than just having a lot of money. It is a life fully invigorated by him. It is our soul, our very life force, our nephesh being turned in the direction of him. And I think actually, if you really catch what David's singing about, that's what he's singing about. Is how do we, in the midst of death, in the midst of a body that's dying, in the midst of a planet that's really screwed up, in the midst of people that are just bent on injustice, in fact, it's their mother tongue, how do we exist and thrive? It has something to do with allowing the Lord causing us to turn our very source, to recognize that regardless of where I am, if I should go to the highest heights or to the pit of hell in my life, in my experience, he is there to bring comfort. Because if I'm there and he's there, he's got some tools to both defend and to offend. Surely goodness, that's tov. We've talked about tov before, appropriateness. What is right? It relates correctly to you. Surely goodness. And hesed, it's that loving, it's the covenant word of the Old Testament. It's that loving kindness, but that's the best translation we have. But that word is power-packed in the Hebrew. It is everything that is right about God being bestowed, put into, relating to you. His loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life. It pursues us. You guys remember a couple years back the book God Chasers? And there was kind of a pseudo-movement that came out of that, which was very cool and very powerful. David here has a different version of that. In fact, he doesn't prescribe a reality where we find where God is and we run to it. He describes a reality where God knows exactly where we are and he is viciously pursuing us. In fact, that's the word there. The strongest translation there is persecute. He is persecuting you with goodness and loving kindness. Only goodness and loving kindness are following, pursuing, persecuting you all the days of your life. What a perspective. And then we end where we began. And I, David says, and the Hebrew here reads it this way, and I myself will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Maybe take into account some of David's other songs, melodies that he's written that we have captured, the alternate translation might fit better, especially if you've been in the valley of the death shadow, is that I myself will return to the house of the Lord again and again and again and again in my going out and in my coming in. That's the picture. Our life goes out and we get to come back in. We go out and we come back in. It's very rhythmic. God is very rhythmic. He's an inhale and an exhale God. There's times for following and there's times for going. It's just this rhythm, this flow. It's a tide almost of the way God moves. So the promise and the banquet of your life in the valley of the death shadow is this, that there is the days ahead where we dwell or we return to the house of the Lord forever. Now in Hebrew, it's beautiful. Because that word return matches the word return or restore of our soul. It's a song. It has cadence and meter. It does something. It loses some of it in English, but I think we can still chew on it and gain from it. And this, what he pits against each other, is the returning of my life force and the returning to the house of the Lord. They are one and the same. Because the presence of God is the uniting factor. The presence of God is what restores life. The presence of God is what makes his house anything special. And so we do end where we began. And where do we begin? The Lord is shepherding me. What does that look like? Well, you are going to walk. And it's really nice at first because there's grassy pastures and there's calm waters and my soul is being invigorated. And that plays out even more, moreover, in addition to, or let me really explain what that means. When I go then to the valley of the death shadow, he's with me because he led me there. And he is not ill-equipped. His rod to beat the mess out of anything that comes at me that doesn't need to be, and his staff to guide me in the midst of that when I am fearing, even though he said don't fear. That's hard to do. And as you walk it, there's a table. My gosh, it's for you and it's for me, according to his goodness, where the bowls are dumped out on you, which, by the way, might make you more appetizing to the wolves and such. But it's in your honor. Based on his honor. What a great concept our God has for us. And in that perspective, as you're sitting at the table with the wolves howling behind you, the fear is gone. You settle in and you're just like, man, only goodness. And his covenant, loving kindness, faithfulness, love pursues me. I mean, you recognize that gets said in the midst of the death shadow, right? That gets said with the wolves lurking and the peering eyes out of the darkness, who are truly pursuing. David, at least in parts of his life, overcomes something. And he recognizes that in my going out and my coming in, you are near. He sings about it several times. It seems to be something that he's reminded of deeply within the Psalms, and we get to just benefit from it and chew on it. What a perspective. What would it look like for years in my life from here forward to recognize that if it's Death Shadow Valley or if it's grassy pastures, grove, whatever it is, it's him. He's with me. Is he scared of hell? Can God not go where there's sin? Weird teaching of the church. God's appropriate wherever he goes. So big deal if there's inappropriateness around him. Sin, dysfunction. Oh, when righteousness steps in the room, it just kind of starts to alter that, doesn't it? Your life is no different. My life is no different. He's shepherding you. That's the beauty. At the end of the day, you and I can begin to settle into perspective regardless of where we are. Because he's shepherding me, because he's shepherding you, you have no lack. You will lack for nothing. It's a simple song, isn't it? Father, may we learn how to sing it ourselves. It's in your name, Jesus.